The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
The advances in the field of analytical and environmental sciences have exploded over the last few years. For example, it's now possible to track what a city population is consuming, be it caffeine or cocaine, and even the ingredients of explosives can be monitored in counter-terrorism activity. Irishman Dr. Leon Barron is reader in analytical and environmental sciences at Imperial College London. Leon, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat. Pleasure to talk to you.
Now, it's an extraordinary career arc you've had. Tell us, how does a young fellow become fascinated by analytical chemistry?
I certainly didn't dream about it when I was a young boy. I'm originally from near Ross County, Wexford, and during the transition year at school, I was offered a 2-week placement at a fertilizer factory. And at that time, I was actually interested in doing technical drawing or maybe architecture or engineering. The work experience put me in a laboratory, and I was fascinated by how you could make something that was quite invisible into something visible, and you could get information from it. So I went on to pursue chemistry at university in Dublin. And then sort of devoted my life to it ever since. And after a while, I got interested in this idea that our waste products could actually be used as a source of intelligence about how healthy we are, or indeed, you know, if there's things that we need to be worried about. And normally in sort of hospitals and in laboratories for human health, you take a urine sample or blood sample. But for us, I was interested in looking at a whole city and treating it as one person, essentially one organism, and testing the wastewater so that we could understand the health of a city in almost near real time.
And we'll talk about your current work in a moment. But just going back to New Ross on a fertilizer factory, I'm amazed they trusted a transition student to do worthwhile work.
Well, it was quite an exciting experience, as you can imagine, you know, putting on the white coat and going into a laboratory. But I learned a lot of skills there, to be honest, as a young fella. And it's stuck with me today, certainly around quality control and understanding if products are safe for consumption and things like that. But yeah, it was a really, really good experience, and I think it really served me well.
Now, the business of monitoring sewage came into focus during COVID, where in a number of locations, it was reported that they were monitoring sewage to detect the presence of the disease. Were you involved in that?
I wasn't involved in COVID monitoring, but there's a national program here in the UK that did it across hundreds of different sites to pretty much in near real time sort of track where cities and towns were rising and falling. I believe it's the same in Ireland. So it was really a really frontline way to get ahead of it by a few weeks even. And it really, really prioritised where to focus efforts.
Because I've been watching the series This England on Sky about the challenge that COVID presented to the authorities, and they simply weren't able to test with PCR testing in sufficient quantities to have a sense of the real picture. And work like the work you've described would be very, very helpful. Now, when you take a city like London, how do you take its, chemical profile? Where do you go to sample it? Because you're not sticking a test tube down every toilet.
No, that's right. Yeah, that would be a pretty horrible thing to do. So really, essentially, everything that people flush down their loo or, you know, wash down their sink ends up at a sewage treatment works. And we have little machines that sit there just before the treatment works, so nothing to do with the treatment process. And it takes a small sample of that over a whole day. So we essentially get a vat of wastewater that we can take back to the laboratory here at Imperial and do a very, very quick analysis for several hundred, if not thousands, of different things in the wastewater. And essentially that's what's happening in that city that day. So it really gives us that immediacy of information.
Now, you mentioned you could be tracking thousands of chemicals, and you have, certainly in my mind's eye, the vision of a lab and people in white coats and, you know, decanting samples into test tubes and then adding reagents to try and figure out what's there. I suspect it's rather more efficient these days.
Well, as you said in the introduction, it's sort of, you know, it's really, really that technology has advanced to a stage now where it's sort of an industrial scale pipeline to do these things. And so it's not unusual for us to be analyzing thousands of samples on a sort of a pipeline. That the machines now, they're called mass spectrometers, they can measure thousands of things. And we can actually take a sample of wastewater and do very, very little actual prep. So the analysts don't have to do very much apart from filter it and then inject it onto the system. And it gives you a reading within about 5 minutes. So in that sense, that our challenge now is, as you said, not being able to respond in a number of areas. It's to scale all of this up so that we can start monitoring more areas at really high frequency. So you get a huge mountain of information about that.
Now, when you run the sample through the mass spectrometer, I'm thinking back to my college days, and I'm sure the technology has changed, but the kind of feed out was, it was a graph with a series of spikes. And
that's
each
right.
spike identified a different chemical.
That's right. So essentially, we have some very high spec ones here that can, you know, separate the components of a sample into all its constituent parts. And each little spike corresponds to the mass of a compound. And essentially, we can work out what that is, either by searching in a library or figuring it out from the spectrum.
Now, therefore, you actually see loads of spikes. So unlike in some testing in a lab, you have to know what you're looking for. So you're testing for cholera or you're testing for COVID or whatever it might be. You're just doing a broad sweep to see what have we got here.
Well, essentially, there's two. So the first thing we do is we do a sort of a general chemical test to see where, for example, it might be an issue. So for us, still the biggest challenge is, where do we take a sample? Where's the problem area? And so we do a quick test on that to see what's there for a set of about 200 chemicals. And then we have another machine that looks at those bad areas or areas that might require further study and essentially sweep, you know, for us, it's about 1,200 chemicals in about 10 minutes. And then we can really start to see all of the different things that are present there. We don't necessarily ask it what to look for. It sort of tells us and it's becoming really massive.
Now, what have you found? In London, for example, you can actually almost figure out how much cocaine has been taken by the population.
That's right. Yeah, so I mean, essentially, one of the big treatment works here in London serves about a billion litres of wastewater a day. So you know the volume. And we measure the amount of a substance, usually what comes through the body. So the cocaine is taken by a human, it passes down into the wastewater network in some changed form. And we can back calculate from that billion litres of wastewater into a kilo value. And in London, it's a rather large amount, perhaps due to the population there, but it's about 20 to 30 kilos of cocaine used per day, which is astronomical, really, when we first found the result.
Yeah. And can you isolate it to certain areas? I mean, can you go down to the city of London, for example, where all the traders are, who are supposed to, you know, in fiction at any rate, live on cocaine in order to do their deals at lightning speed?
If I was given a pound for every time I was asked that question, I'd be a rich man, I think. So just for the ethics of it, we're not trying to catch individuals, right? So what you flush down the loo or what you excrete is not, we're not looking for the individuals. But in theory, you can go back up the pipe, if you like, and take samples. Currently, we're not doing that just because it would be a massive job.
Yeah.
But certainly for things that are perhaps more immediate to public safety. So if somebody's making something that they shouldn't do, for example, you can start to find out where those things are manufactured by testing the wastewater.
So if you found the component of an explosive, for example, in a sample, by the time you might try to go back upstream, they might have finished their manufacturing process and, you know, the bomb is made.
Well, I mean, if you put it into perspective, so if we take a sample on a given day, we can analyze it in 5 minutes. So we can pretty much tell you that day if something's happening in that locality. Finding out where it is in a city, of course, you're not going to use wastewater analysis as a silver bullet for that. There'll be police and intelligence on the ground to do that sort of stuff. But at least it can tell you, look, there's something being manufactured here that we need to urgently respond to.
Now, in terms of drug use, is it possible to suppose there's an epidemic of crack cocaine or crystal meth or something in a particular area, and therefore you might, I don't know, recommend to the authorities, look, you need some sort of intervention in this population?
Yeah, there is. That's a very good point, Pat. So essentially, you know, if you take all the cities around, and certainly since COVID, now that the infrastructure is in place to monitor COVID, certainly the direction of travel would be to sort of monitor where problems are arising. And sort of to put it in perspective, in the UK, there's about 4,500 overdoses a year. And about half of those are just for opioids, so heroin and things like that. So it's really important to know where that's a problem, so you can get in there and you can provide interventions, you know, sort of support for addicts, and also more policing perhaps to make the streets safer. So very, very much so that would be the direction of travel, to try and do that sort of thing. And really the labs are now at the scale where you can do whole country monitoring like that very quickly.
Now in the EPA here, we've recently had two reports on water quality in our waterways, our rivers, our estuaries, and so on. And we've also had a drinking water report from the EPA. This business of the health of our rivers is hugely important. You've looked at the Thames, and there still is a certain amount of sewage going into the Thames.
Yeah, I mean, it's here. I we've focused a lot over the last 10 years or so on chemicals in the Thames, but not just the Thames, but all its tributaries that feed into it and drain out all of these different neighbourhoods and so on. But kind of really the big figure is that there's about 39 million tonnes of raw sewage going into the Thames per year. So that's mainly rainfall. When it rains very heavily, it mixes with sewage. The treatment plants can't cope with it and it overflows. I suppose to put that into perspective, that works out at about 300 Olympic-sized swimming pools per week, which is absolutely colossal. So the authorities here are really trying to invest in a new way to try and clean that up. So the Thames Tideway, or the super sewer, is being built all the way from west to east London, which is basically a huge drain under the river that will take all of those overflows to a relief works. So really massive investment is required here to try and tackle that.
And what is the health of the Thames? I mean, if you were to give it a mark out of 100, if 100 is brilliant, pristine, and zero is ghastly, where would the Thames currently stand?
Good question. I mean, the Thames was, you know, ecologically dead in the 1800s. So we're certainly not back there. But, you know, in terms of chemical health, there's no river in the UK that has good bill of health for chemicals. And the Thames is no exception. And I think that's rather sad. I think there's a lot to be done. So I can't really answer your question directly, but certainly the state of the entire country is a bit like that.
But when the super sewer gets built and the treatment happens, is it possible, you know, you might see fish at London Bridge?
Yeah, well, we do. I mean, it's not a case that there's nothing living in the Thames. You know, that there have been some recovery in fish populations in the Thames over the last few decades, and you know, certainly it's not all grim. We do see fish in the Thames, and we do see, you know, very, very important critical life in the tributaries as well. So it's certainly not all bad.
In terms of Irish rivers, obviously the pollutant runoff from farms and so on is a problem. You get the occasional industrial accident and fish kills. How do you reckon we're doing?
Well, I've only done a little bit of monitoring in Ireland over the last few years, so I don't know how it generalizes to the whole population. But we do see, you know, 50 to 60 chemicals in wastewaters. We do find a lot lower than that in the rivers, and so the dilution effect I find is a lot more in Ireland for the chemicals that we're looking for. So these are medicines, pesticides, and sort of personal care products. In comparison to what we see here, perhaps.
Yeah, I was just wondering about those personal medicines, for example, the contraceptive pill or antibiotics, and how they impact on, you know, aquatic life, but also maybe when we go through filtration and so on to recreate drinking water, you know, how good are we at doing that?
I wouldn't want to set hairs racing here. I mean, most drinking water is perfectly fine to drink. I drink the tap water here in London. I don't drink bottled water. So I wouldn't necessarily be trying to scare anybody about chemicals coming back into the drinking water. It's still, of course, something we have to keep an eye on. And certainly this technology will help us do that. In terms of the contraceptive pill, I mean, we do find it. Obviously, the population is taking it, and some of that does end up in rivers. Antibiotics is a good point. Obviously, if we're using antibiotics and they're ending up in the environment, then bugs can become resistant to them, and then the antibiotics don't work. So a lot of efforts are going into now trying to change prescription practices so that there's not over-prescribing of antibiotics, so that we don't end up in that situation where our medicines don't work. And you know, finding where these are an issue is part of the problem and something we're tackling.
I'm just wondering how effective treatment is to get rid of these kind of chemicals when, you know, water goes into a river and then goes into a treatment plant. And I've seen those treatment plants where, you know, the chief executive of Thames Water, whatever, will turn on the tap and sewage has gone in one end and water comes out the other end, and he takes a pint full of water and gleefully drinks it, you know, to boost confidence in the process. Mm-hmm. Can you get rid of all the nasty stuff with our current treatment plants?
So nasty stuff being the operative word, most of the sort of regulated nasty chemicals generally should be removed by wastewater treatment plants. But things like, so this is for wastewater, it's not drinking water, mm-hmm. but essentially, you know, and this is not an issue just here, it's an issue everywhere. Treatment plants are not designed to remove the vast majority of things like medicines. And so they won't necessarily remove them entirely. And certainly we find that here, several studies we've done in Europe, including in Ireland, and sort of, you know, but it, in essence, it does reduce the amount that's there. Yeah. And then it's further diluted once it enters the river. But unfortunately, treatment plants are not designed to remove a lot of them.
Because, I mean, even things like UV will kill biological things,
yeah.
but it won't change chemicals.
It can change some chemicals, so UV treatment can alter the chemical structure of some chemicals. It's whether it's turning them into something that's benign or worse, but okay. You know, it's not to confuse the issue.
Leon, look, fascinating stuff, absolutely amazing work that you're doing, and I'm sure every day is an education in your business. Dr. Leon Barron, Reader in Analytical and Environmental Sciences at Imperial College London. Thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.